Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXE 90.7 FM, ICRA, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
And I'm Sam. I am a graduate of Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
Ooh.
Yay. And Amelia and I are here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Other bookish things. Mm-hmm. All that good stuff. And we're so pleased this week to be joined by Sam J. Miller, a local author.
It's my pleasure to be here.
We're so excited to talk about your new book in particular.
Awesome.
Which is very exciting. It just came out on Tuesday, July
2nd.
It's called Destroy All Monsters, and it's your second YA novel.
Yep.
The first was The Art of Starving.
Yes.
Which was fantastic and won you the Nebula Award for
Best Young Adult Science Fiction. No big deal.
I was super excited about this aspect of the Nebula Awards, aside from the fact that you won, which was really the reason I was watching in the first place. But can you tell everyone who the host of the Nebulas was that year?
Oh, it was Telly.
It was Telly Monster from Sesame Street.
I got to meet Telly. I mean, technically it was the human being who operates the puppet that Telly is, but
Telly was there.
My husband and I got to take pictures with Telly afterwards, which, you know, my husband is an immigrant from the Dominican Republic, and when he came here at the age of 9, Sesame Street was an important part of his learning English, so it was very emotional. I mean, it was of course emotionally meaningful to
for
me too to see Telly, but for him it was especially magical moment. So Telly, you know, they tell you don't meet your heroes, but Telly's a pretty cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you meet somebody who you admire and they have an attitude, but Telly's pretty chill.
Nice. Telly's a humble monster. So that was very exciting that your book won that wonderful award. And then I know you were up for a Nebula this year as well for Blackfish City.
Didn't win. That's okay.
They can't give it to you every year.
No, they can't.
It's just not fair.
I've been nominated 5 times, which is a beautiful thing, but I've only won once. So, you know, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. I'll take a win. I'll take one.
Nomination.
I'll take none. Yeah, it's awesome. All good.
Yeah, so that's exciting. And you've won other awards as well for your work. And Destroy All Monsters, your latest, is also fantastic. I started reading it this past weekend. And haven't finished it yet, but have been listening to it every free moment
I have. It sounds like you're pretty close.
I'm pretty close. I have 2 hours left in the audiobook and probably around, 30 or 40 pages in the book. So,
well, thank you for reading.
Yeah, it's great. And the audiobook, Sam hasn't listened to it because he doesn't like listening to his recordings.
No, I can't. Somebody did a recording of one of my short stories, and I started, and then I realized, oh, no, I can't do this at all. This makes me deeply uncomfortable for reasons that I can't fully explain, except that it sounds like someone is reading my thoughts, like someone is in my head. Because when you're writing, it's a pretty solitary act. It's just you and the page, and then it goes out into the world, and that's cool, but you don't really have to deal with it. But then when some other human being is reading it out loud, it becomes a little eerie. As far as I can tell, I'm the only person who really has this problem. I've talked to a lot of other writers who are just fine with listening to audiobooks of their own stuff, so it's just my damage.
Well, so far, I think I've listened to all 3 of your novels, at least in part. I often go back and forth between the audio and the physical book, and I think I know I definitely did for Art of Starving and for this one, but I think I did for Blackfish City as well, and they were all very good.
What a wonderful future this is, where we can listen to books and then pick them up and read them in hardcover and just seamlessly go back and forth between the two of them.
Yeah. I still have to find my spot.
Yeah.
But
I see.
Often I'll listen throughout the day, and then when I go to bed at night and I want to read the physical book, I have to just find my spot.
Got it.
Yeah. But yeah, so you lucked out at least that even though you can't hear it yourself, it sounds great.
Awesome.
And Destroy All Monsters, I'm going to have you tell us a little bit about it, but it's from the perspective of 2 characters, and so there's 2 readers on the audio, which is also
amazing.
Fun.
Makes me feel extra classy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Destroy All Monsters is 2 stories. One is like a gritty contemporary YA about a teenage girl named Ash in the real world who goes to a high school with bullies and hate crimes and is worried about her best friend Solomon, who's having a serious mental health crisis, and she's trying to get him help. But it's also a fantasy story about a boy named Solomon who lives in a city full of dinosaurs and magic, who is very worried about his best friend named Ash, who is the refugee princess, and she is the target of a vast evil conspiracy, and he's trying to save her. And as these 2 versions of Ash and Solomon try to save each other in these 2 separate storylines, they start to fold in on each other and collapse into one story.
Ooh.
We'll see. it sounds good, but whether I pull it off on the page, I don't really know. Mm-hmm. It's not really for me to say. But
I've noticed you have I don't know if fascination is the right word, or interest or affinity for dinosaurs.
I do love dinosaurs.
And some of the art that you do in one of your tattoos.
I do have I get a tattoo for every novel. Yeah. And so the Destroy All Monsters tattoo is a Allosaurus with a quote, which is completely unrelated to the book, except thematically. The quote is, "Our lives are not our own," which is from Cloud Atlas, one of my favorite books/movies. And I thought it got to the sort of like special thing where we depend on each other, and our friends and family and chosen family are the people that we, that our lives are inextricably bound up with theirs, plus a dinosaur.
Yeah.
and I have an amazing tattoo artist in New York City called Bradley Silver at White Rabbit Tattoos, and he does all my tattoos, and he's a genius. So plug for Bradley, if anybody listening is looking for new ink, Bradley Silver at White Rabbit is amazing.
Very nice.
That's cool, like to get a new tattoo for every book. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I regret the rule now. Like, I made up that rule before I had any tattoos, and then I got them, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. I want to get a tattoo every day, because tattoos are really fun and cool. But now
I
have this rule, and my husband, who does not want me to get a tattoo every day, is holding me to the rule. So, yes, it's a cool rule. Knock on wood, so far I've been able to get several tattoos, and hopefully I'll be able to get more tattoos as a result of selling more books.
That'd be cool.
You'll just have to start writing stories about miniature worlds so they can get smaller. Definitely,
I have like two more full-size large tattoos, and after that, the tattoo for each book is going to have to get smaller. I'm very vain, and so I won't get tattoos in places no one will see, because I want them to see, because they're amazing. So, you know, the amount of skin that people will ever actually see is relatively small. I'm working with a pretty small canvas, and I won't get any on my neck.
Or at least your face.
Or at least that's what I say now. Who knows? Who knows what I'll say a year from now? Often I'll make my rules for myself that will eventually cease to be useful.
So it's like trying to set a budget at the book fair. It's
very difficult.
It's impossible.
Exactly. It's folly. It's rank folly. It's good to have the intention, and it's also good to say, F it, I'm going to get a lot of books.
Yeah. So I'm curious, because Destroy All Monsters, you have these two main characters and two different worlds. And in Blackfish City, you had mostly one shared world, but different parts of that world and many different characters that you hopped around to. In terms of writing the story out, do you skip around a lot, or how much do you focus on one element of the story and then figure out how they merge together versus writing sort of linearly through the story?
I tend to write pretty linearly. If stuff gets shuffled around, it's usually after the fact of when I realize that things need to be changed, or in the editing process if my editor says, I don't know why this character is doing this, so I'll need to go back and make their actions make more sense. So in writing, there's like two schools of thought, people who outline and people who don't. They call it pantsing, like flying by the seat of your pants. You either write a detailed outline or you pants it. And I'm sort of both. So I tend to have a very rough outline of like, I know this is eventually what's going to happen, but let me just start writing and figure out who these characters are and let them surprise me and let them figure it out for me. It gets a little all over the place. So I guess the answer is I got no idea. It's just a mess.
Well, it works out in the end. So that's
I hope so. I hope so.
And this is also your second book that's set in a sort of fictionalized Hudson.
Yeah.
Like a sort of
different
alternate universe.
Yes.
Made up Hudson. What's that like writing about your childhood home? It's still your hometown, even though you don't live here currently, but your mom still.
Yeah, it's really weird. I mean, part of it is like I live in New York City now. I've lived there for almost 20 years. I really love it. I love the city, but I wasn't a young person here. So being a young person in a big city versus a small town is really different. Mm-hmm. And so I can't imagine how it would have changed me growing up in a big city. So especially for young adult stuff, it's hard for me to imagine the real world, but not Hudson. Mm-hmm. and also, you know, I mean, a lot of times writers are trying to heal their own wounds or make sense of difficult experiences they've had. So a lot of times the stuff that I'm writing about teenagers is informed by my own difficult adolescence. So again, that's so heavily imprinted by the space that you're in. So yeah, I think that it's a fascinating place. And I hated it growing up, and I couldn't wait to get out. And then when I got out, I was like, oh, this place is pretty cool to visit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like James Joyce, who hated Dublin and got out of Dublin as soon as he could, but then spent his entire life writing about Dublin from Paris or Switzerland. So not to compare myself to James Joyce, but I get it now. I get why he moved out, but then couldn't move on.
Mm-hmm. Because you now have two young adult novels and one adult novel published, as well as short stories. When you set out to write a story, do you know what audience you're writing for? Or does that happen more at the publisher or agent level? Or do you know when you're done?
It tends to take shape over time very slowly and, again, messily. Like, I don't really have a system. Stuff just happens. But often I will have an idea that will be sort of kicking around in my head for a really long time. Like, with Destroy All Monsters, I knew that I wanted to write a story that was set in these two worlds, like a fantasy world and the real world, and that goes back and forth, and that the two worlds are connected. And that's been something I've wanted to do for a very long time and hadn't found the right story for. So sometimes it just takes shape over time of like, oh, I know I want to do a story with a character who has this superpower, but it isn't until the other pieces start to come together that I realize, oh, this is probably about a young person. Mm-hmm. And so if it's about a young person, does that mean that it's a young adult novel? Does that mean that it's a novel for grown-ups with a teenage protagonist? Most of that is just a me decision, and then I'll send it to my agent, mm-hmm. and my agent will try to sell it. Or I'll talk it over with my agent to be like, is this a terrible idea? And then he'll tell me if it's a terrible idea. Although my agent is amazing, and he's never told me I have a terrible idea. And he usually encourages me to write what I want to write, even if it sounds terrible, because usually it ends up being okay, I hope. As long as you write what you're excited about, mm-hmm. and passionate about, I think the rest can sort of be figured out on the fly. Hmm. I got a question for you guys.
Ooh. Okay.
What good books have you read lately?
Right now I'm reading One of Us is Lying.
Oh, how is it?
It's pretty good.
Awesome. I haven't read it yet.
It's a murder mystery.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun. We have that for Battle of the Books this year.
Oh,
one
nice.
Of our five books that the teens are reading.
That's great.
And it wasn't my favorite book I ever read, but I definitely was. That was another one I listened to. And I think I listened to it almost all in one go just because I wanted to know how it ended. I wanted to know if I was right in my guesses. And so it was really effective in that way in the suspense. And so it was a fun read. I read recently that I like? Well, I'm loving Destroy All Monsters.
Awesome.
So that's great. I just read, I always forget the title, but you might know it because it's also young adult speculative fiction. They Both Die in the End.
Yeah, by Adam Silvera.
By Adam Silvera. Yeah. I liked that a lot.
That's a great one.
And The Very Large Expanse of Sea by Tahereh Mafi.
Oh, that one I don't
know. Was great. That one's not speculative fiction.
But that's okay.
It's okay.
We can still hang out with them.
Yeah.
Those kids are cool too.
They go to
another school, but it's cool. We get along. We don't have a rivalry.
What are some of the books that you've read recently that you've enjoyed?
I just read a book called A Place for Us by Fatima Farhir Mirza, mm-hmm. which is not young adult and is not genre. I usually only read science fiction, fantasy, and horror, but every once in a while, I'll find myself in a strange, unfamiliar place where there's no magic or monsters or dinosaurs or spaceships or robots. And that's cool, too. and this is a beautiful book. It's about an Indian Muslim immigrant family in California, and really beautifully written, really great story. And I am a big fan of Ursula Le Guin, mm-hmm. but I had only read her science fiction novels, like The Left Hand of Darkness. And so she has a fantasy series about Earthsea.
Yay.
And so I had never read those. And, you know, I don't really like... this is the problematic narrative I have in my head, which is that I don't like secondary world fantasy or, like, sort of epic Lord of the Rings style fantasy, but that's just because I don't like Lord of the Rings. It's not because I don't like that genre. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of times that genre is just trying to replicate the Lord of the Rings for people who just want to keep reading the Lord of the Rings over and over again, and that's cool for them, but that's not my thing. So I have in my head that I don't like that genre, so I often steer clear of it, but then I read something like Ursula Le Guin's Earthsea books, and I'm like, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I love this. So those books are beautiful. I very rarely read a series together. I'll like read one book and then read something else and then go back. But this one, I'm just reading them one after the other because mm-hmm. they're so good. So that's very exciting.
My mom will be happy to know that there's another person in the world that isn't a fan of Lord of the Rings besides her, because she's surrounded by a family of people who love Lord of the Rings, and we always like tease, like, Mom, you want to watch your favorite movie?
I'm sorry.
There it is.
I'm sorry I insulted the Lord of the Rings.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Mashuda's here.
We're just joined by the wonderful Mashuda.
Yay. Nice to see you again.
Hello. My name is Mashuda, and I am 17 years old, and I'm from Hudson.
Yay.
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 So we were just talking about, Sam had asked us what books we'd read recently that we liked, and then we turned it back on him. He's recently reading Earthsea, which I read the first two, Wizard of Earthsea and Tombs of Atuan, which I'm not sure if I say that name right, but that's how I say it. And I still have to read Farthest Shore, and I think there's some other books set in that world.
Yeah.
I really liked Wizard of Earthsea a lot, and then I loved Tombs of Atum, and then I just somehow never made it to the third, and so now I'm at a point where it's been so long that I'm like, should I reread the first two before I go in? I don't know.
That's such a frustrating point to be in with any series. Yeah, just like, oh, I don't remember.
Yeah, I read a book that I'm not going to name, and I didn't love it. I didn't hate it, but I stopped reading halfway through because I got distracted with other books, and then the book got picked for my book club, which means I'm probably going to have to start over and read it again because I don't remember it enough to just pick up where I left off. So these are not major problems, you know, having to read a book.
Well, on a book show, it's a major struggle for us, especially with I read a lot of comics, but I read them in volume form. Right. So I only read them once or twice a year, depending on how quickly they put out the volumes.
Right.
And sometimes every time I get a new one, I'm like, do I remember what happened last time? And you really want to have that last season on.
Yeah.
But they don't always do that.
No. I love the way they do it on television shows. They show you only what's going to happen in that episode. You know, it's like they're not going to give you the whole backstory. They're just going to be like, remember this person whose father died?
That might be relevant to this episode.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They need to do that for books.
They need like a recap thing, you know, in the same style of Once Upon a Time.
Exactly. Yeah. What comics have you read lately that are amazing?
Well, one I just recently read the first volume of, and I have the second volume at home, so I haven't started it yet, is Skyward, which I thought was really fun. That one got nominated for an Eisner this year. And I love Black Hammer and Paper Girls. I've been enjoying the new Runaways. Awesome. I liked the old Runaways, at least the earlier ones, and then they just re-released that with Rainbow Rowell working on them, so those are fun. I think those are my main ones. I still read Walking Dead, although I'm less invested than I once was, and Saga I know is taking a break now, but I loved that series.
Saga's so good.
Yeah.
Saga is like my go-to if I meet someone who's into comics and isn't sure about graphic novels or wants to get into comics or graphic novels. That's always my, like, read Saga. That's the gateway drug.
In a good way.
I always go back to read Nimona, even though it was several years ago when I first read it.
Is that a Netflix show now?
No.
No, but Noelle Stevenson, the one who worked on Nimona, is working on the reboot of She-Ra, Princess of Power.
That's why I have that in my head.
So,
that's the Netflix connection.
Yeah, so she is on that. I tried watching that. It was okay.
I was like,
Noelle Stevenson's on it. I need to at least see a few episodes, the first season at least.
Yeah.
I do love the Hilda series, though, which did become a Netflix series. But I like the comics more. The show's good, too. I mean, it's geared for kids, so I'm sure kids would love it. But the comics are really creative and fun. And they're large scale. They're like big.
Nice.
Big books.
Excellent.
It's fun.
I'm reading the Legend of Korra comics from Dark Horse, which are really good. And I don't know if any of y'all watched Legend of Korra.
I know how it ends. Okay. I know a bit about it.
So it ends with the main character, Korra, who's the Avatar. She and her really close friend, Asami, who's also a girl, realize that they're in love with each other. And that's the end of the show. And then the comic book picks up with them sort of going on vacation together and going on adventures together, but as a couple. So it's brilliant. It's a great comic, and it's a great show.
Everyone basically read comics, and I feel like I'm the only one that don't. So, like, I really should start. Like,
no pressure. If you just like regular books, that's cool, too. There's good comics, though.
Yeah.
What books have you read lately that you like?
I haven't read anything lately, but I'm still reading The Hate U Give.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
I love that one.
That's one of our battle books this year.
Yeah. Oh, nice. So One of Us is Lying, The Hate U Give.
Six of Crows is another one.
Good
one. That
one
was really good.
Yep.
Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe.
I hear good things about that one.
That's my fave.
And Darkest Part of the Forest?
Yes,
the Holly
I think
Black?
That is.
Oh,
it is.
I love Holly Black.
Yeah, that one's really good. That was the only one I hadn't read at the time that the books were selected, and it didn't sound like a book for me, but I really loved it.
She's a great writer.
Yeah.
She tells stories really brilliantly.
It shared something in common with your books that I really love about fantasy and speculative fiction, is that I really love when there is a sort of contemporary fiction aspect, or it's sort of like the world that we live in, but a little bit different. That really works well for me as a reader.
Awesome.
Especially with a book like Destroy All Monsters, where there is one section, one story that's much more contemporary fiction. It may have some elements that would fall into speculative fiction, and then one side is super fantasy oriented. I think it really works well for readers that maybe are trying out a genre that they're not as used to reading. So whether they really read fantasy and it's giving them a taste of contemporary fiction, or vice versa.
That's my hope.
They get to dip their toes in fantasy.
That's my hope. Yeah. The other possible scenario is that people who like fantasy and people who like gritty contemporary will both hate it. I'm hopeful that's not what happens.
Yeah,
my goal was to sort of hook people from either side, because I like both. I think lots mm-hmm. of people like both, but lots of times people just read one and not the other, and that's cool if that's your thing, but it's also sometimes fun to find other stuff. And you know, Holly Black was my Clarion teacher.
She was
my instructor at the Clarion Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Workshop, so it is very understandable. I know I learned a lot from her, and I'm sure there's things that she does that I am also doing. I mean, for me, there's so many things that make me really angry about the world we live in, or that make me upset or sad or scared or hopeful. And so science fiction and fantasy, usually when I'm writing them, it's a way to talk about the things that I have strong opinions about in the world, but to talk about them in a slightly different way. Like, I want to talk about power and oppression and how people are hurt by the systems that we live in, and how would that be different if there was magic? You know, so it's a fun way to sort of say what you feel about the world, but say it in a different way, with hopefully monsters and fun and magic and adventure.
Well, I know this week Sam and Amelia are both hanging out at the library.
Yeah.
For a sci-fi writing workshop that Sam is offering. So I'm curious what suggestions you would have for people that are looking to start out writing sci-fi.
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot, of how do I talk to younger writers? You know, I've been studying writing so long, and I've read so many books and had so many teachers, and, you know, I've absorbed so much information, and what's the most important thing, or what is the sort of bottom line I'd say to someone? And I think that the most important thing is just have fun, you know, write about the things that give you joy. And that can be serious stuff. It doesn't mean it's all got to be fun and games, but it's really, for me, about, you know, you should do things that you enjoy. And a lot of times you can tell when a writer is writing something that they're bored, or that they think it's very serious and they're taking it very seriously and they're not having any fun. You know, I think that a lot of young writers, they start out writing because they're readers and they love a book, and maybe they start writing fanfic, or they want to sort of try to do something similar to what other writers have done that they love. And I think that's really important, and I think people should, in order to figure out who you are as a writer, sometimes that means experimenting with trying to be other writers. That you don't want to be exactly like someone else, but if you want to try writing out the style of Holly Black or J.K. Rowling or Stephen King or whoever, to figure out what your voice is and sort of like combine all those different pieces, I think that's really important. It's very easy to take writing too seriously and to think of it as like, I'm a tortured poet with tortured poet things to say.
I wish I was wearing my Edgar Allan Poe shirt when
exactly,
you said that.
Exactly.
I thought about wearing it today.
Edgar Allan Poe is cool. I like him. But it's okay to be a tortured poet, but it's also okay to be like a fan person who just really loves stuff and wants to geek out about it. Some of the participants in the workshop are like, they're really into Spider-Man. Spider-Man's not one of my favorite superheroes, but they're really into it. And they have a lot of like really interesting opinions and thoughts about Spider-Man and the Avengers. And so that's cool. Like, if the Avengers gets you excited and makes you want to tell stories or argue about stories about, no, that's not why they did that. They did it because of this or whatever. Whatever, that's cool. Like, it should just be something where you're having fun.
I know some of those kids are also like really into Star Wars too, which fits for a sci-fi writing class.
Yeah, and there's a lot to learn from Star Wars. There's a lot to learn from all these things, and even if some of it you might, I don't want to say outgrow, but people change over time and what they love and what they respond to. And so sometimes you like love a book and then you come back to it 5 years later or 10 or 20 and you're like, this is terrible. Or you hate a book and you come back to it 5 or 10 or 20 years later and you're like, wow, this is amazing. What was wrong with me? That's the fun part about getting old. It's like the consolation prize for becoming an old person, is that you can go back and see how you've changed, because the books stay the same, but your experience of it is totally different.
I have a question. So, like, I'm very amazed by the fact that, like, authors like you, and they can write so much chapters per chapter. Like, when I write my school essays, I'm like, I have very trouble finishing the pages because I know what I want to say, but I don't have, you know, the keyword to make it more, you know, sound amazing. And so, like, how do you do that? Like, how do you
Well, I think part of it goes back to what I was just saying about having fun. You're probably not having fun when you're writing those school essays. If you were having fun, they'd zip by. If you were writing about something that brought you a lot of joy and made you really happy, I'm sure you've noticed that it's easier to write an essay about something you're interested in than something you're not interested in. So being into it and having fun is an important part of it. And another part of it is just practice. Because when I was younger, I didn't, like you said, like finding the right words. That's I mean, that's literally the description of a writer's job, is finding the right words. And that's very hard. And like any job, you're not born with it. You have to learn it. You have to figure it out. And so figuring out how to communicate things of like, well, this character is sad in this chapter. How am I going to make them sad? Like, how do I communicate that they're sad without just saying they're sad? Which you can say that, but in order to make it come alive for people, you should be able to like say it in a way that feels fresh and vivid. So a lot of it is just practice of trying.
Looking up
things.
Synonyms online is your friend, especially if it's a long page paper and you need bigger words to get that one last page in there.
Absolutely. The thesaurus is your friend.
Yeah, I was thinking of also like be sitting across from you and be like, Sam looks really sad. You don't have to tell me you're sad. You don't have to say, I'm sad.
Right.
But like, what is it about Sam that's making me think he's sad? Is it the way he's talking, the way he's holding himself, facial expression?
Yep.
Is a giant tear rolling down his face? You know, there's different ways that if you can kind of visualize it, I think that can help.
Yeah.
Develop
details.
Some of it.
Details help, and sensory details. And here's a hack. Here's a trick. Smell is the most evocative sense. So if you describe a smell, it evokes a lot more memory than if you describe a sight or a sound or something like that, or a taste. So describing a smell, readers can imagine a smell much more vividly than they can imagine a sight or a sound or a taste or a feeling. So I have a lot of smells in my books.
I'll be keeping an eye out for that the rest of Destroy All Monsters.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we're just about out of time today.
I was just getting started.
Yeah.
Well, we can always have you back, Sam.
Anytime.
You're welcome anytime. But thank you so much for coming. Thanks for doing the workshop at the library.
Thank you.
Kids were all really excited today.
Both have been super fun.
And I hope everyone out there listening will check out Sam's books. The most recent is Destroy All Monsters, which is on shelves now, and Blackfish City and The Art of Starving.
And stay tuned. There might be a Hudson event for Destroy All Monsters. I had a reading at the library for Art of Starving that was super fun. So I might do something like that for Destroy All Monsters.
Yeah, come on back. We'll let our listeners know.
Awesome.
Once we have that date, hopefully set. But yeah, definitely check out the books. I have not finished Destroy All Monsters yet, but The Art of Starving and Blackfish City were two of my favorite books that I've read in recent years, and this one so far is one of my favorite books I've read this year, and I'm not just saying that because you're here.
Awesome. I
truly mean
that.
It. And yeah, so we'll be back next week to talk about some more books.
Yay, yep. Books.
Thanks everyone for listening. Hope you have a good week with lots of quality reading time. Happy reading.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.